speech, if it's not a tradition, I'm going to start with the methodological. Where I was trying to come from in this jitter. So I want to talk about multiple meanings of the term the chatzila and the diabet. So the chatzila and the diabet, in the most conventional term, they talk about the best and the less than best. Now, that's the conventional usage of the term. Etymologically, as you all know, the chatzila means ab initio, right? And the diabet means once it has already been done. And that's another way. Right, that's another way of framing it. Right, the chatzila is what you would do if you had complete freedom, and the diavad is what, having done it, right, you can settle for. But I think there's another way in which you can start the terms. I would call distinguishing between actual and ideal chatzila. And this actual chatzila is when this is what you should do. And then there's an ideal of chatzila, which is this is what you would do. And those are different things. And the story of it,
I love telling it, maybe a real impact on me in this regard, is that Rabbi Lloyd being fond of repeating that it's up to the ideal of chatzila get. The reason it's up to the ideal of chatzila get has the addresses of the husband and wife. Get is ideal because that way you've come much closer to identifying the parties accurately because you solve the problem through your division of the same city because after all, right, they're the same city, but they're different addresses. So you to look at skill, you write that in the get, but it's hostage to write that in the get. And the reason it's hostage to write that in the get is that if you leave out the address, the get is kosher, but if you make an error in the address, the get is tuffle. So you can't take the chance of making the get thoughtful by writing a chatzila get. And I thought that was a very powerful idea. So I want to extend that idea, I think it's along the same line, which is that the question of whether you ought to implement a halakha that you believe is a chatzila, but that has never been tried. And what happens if you're in a situation where you can say, well, if I just look at the Mekarot, this seems to me to be the best possible system, but we've never done it. And we have no idea if it will work or not, but abstractly, it seems to me to make lots of sense, as opposed to there's an existing system, and the existing system works not perfectly. We can all think about how if we had designed it, it would have been better. But we know that it works. And here I'm influenced among other things by the writings of Friedrich Hayek, who is a very economist. One of his cool arguments is that planned things never work quite as well as things that are developed over time. Because planned things always miss things. Right? You're just thinking about Asian abstract, you always miss details that affect implementation. So this may be, I think I suggested this once and shared before, this may be in some sense what's behind the principle of Bina the Machlokes HaBina. Bina the Machlokes HaBina, as many of you know, halakha is not about obeying the law. Bina the Machlokes HaBina is about giving halakhic significance to the legal structure of the country in which you live. It happens that you can hold that among the legal significance is that the country has the right to punish you. If you break the laws, you might even go so far as to hold that because the country has the right to punish you, there is a corresponding obligation to obey the law. But of course, Dina Mokutadina just means that halakhically, rather than starting from scratch, we take as a given in the economic system and in the criminal justice system, we take the laws of the country as a given. And it might just be the diavad in the sense of, well, we can't have an idea, we can't have the pure halakhic system, so we have to accommodate to this. Or it might be the diavad that if halakha hasn't actually been enforced in this country before, who knows what would happen if we try it. And this works. So in that, like, I want to just quote a line that I come back to. Wallace Stevens, in a collection of essays called The Necessary Angel, has a description of poetry. In good poetry, it results
pressure of reality on the imagination. Poetry is not fantasy, and prose is about reality, fantasy is about imagination, poetry is the result of the pressure of reality on imagination. So I like saying that one good definition of halakha is that halakha results from the pressure of reality on Torah. And that's the framework that I'm working in. To take the application to specific concepts, the question is, we can construct an ideal Hilchot Lashon Hara that accounts for the, that creates space for some kind of public journalism. But the reality is, so far as we can tell, that it's never been tried. And we don't know what the consequences are of any of the systems that we develop in our own heads. The American system, as the British Missile Leader King system, these are all systems that have evolved over time. We can watch and we can see, like, we understand, you know, what the, we can learn what the risk of excessive lightly tight libel and slander laws are, we can learn what the risk of excessive loose and tight libel laws, we can talk about fire restraint versus post-sexual punishment, and limiting awards and all that kind of stuff. In the legal context, we can talk about how various codes of journalistic ethics have or have not functioned, from what most of our speakers tell us that has largely, as written documents, they have simply not functioned. As formal codes, simply not functioned. But at the end, if we, or whatever group of people one brought together to create the code newspapers, started from scratch in our own rooms, entirely likely that it would take a lot of working out in practice before we really figured out what should work. Because we don't know, right? None of us, right? And we're not gonna all of a sudden create the experience of people who are not offering newspapers because they haven't been any. Therefore, it seems to me that one has to at least consider the possibility that one is better off working to be edited than the chafila. And trying to figure out what is the contribution that halacha can make to this reality, and not fixing the things that aren't broke, as opposed to starting from scratch, recognizing that halacha results from pressure of reality on Torah, and that Torah is itself. There may be lots of values in the exercise of considering what the ideal halachic journalism would be. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we should seek to implement that halakha if somebody asks us to shayla when we have not yet had the experience with implementing it. Yes, that's okay. So that's one, right, that's one framework. It means, in a sense, that the first question you have to ask in halakhic cases of the sort is whether you think the system is sufficiently broken that you have to reinvent it. Or whether you think that Dina Malchus Adina doesn't apply in governments that you consider illegitimate or hopelessly unjust. In a Chas V'Shalom, it should be up there
to participate in the overthrow of evil governments. If there are laws, not only just laws against Jews, right? Let's say, would we say, Dina Malchus Adina compelled Jews to obey the Fugitive Slave Act in 19th century America? I hope not. And Dina Malchus Adina isn't a license to surrender one's moral judgment to the government. It's a value. I think it has to be set, like every other halakhic value, it has to be set in context. Even if one thinks it creates a direct obligation, which I tend to think not. I think it creates a right, and then there's a general obligation to participate, to create a federal social order, and usually obeying the law is part of creating that social order.
So, I think that one question one has to ask is, how much do we really want to change the work habits of existing, at least high-level journalism? And do we really think that a purely aesthetic system conceived of from first presidential principles of Hotel Shahara is pragmatically going to be dramatically superior to what they do? Such that it's worth taking the chance that we'll just create something that doesn't work at all. Right? That it will be, you know, the model that's been said in this context is the French Revolution. Which looked really great on paper. So that is the intellectual framework that this tribo was written in the context of, and which right now I tend to think I am more comfortable with, both because of the general principle and because specifically it doesn't seem to me that we could create a real halakhic system that works because we don't have sufficient accountability in the people who have run the system. We can't get a pure halakhic system, right? I think that whatever we would come up with, no one would implement it. We end up being caught up in power politics, and it has no defense against that. We don't have the people standing outside the system who could do it. And I don't see us as having, I don't see rabbis as having the confidence to make detailed decisions at every journalistic practice. There can be a set of rabbis who spend their lives being journalists, but we don't have any such now. So the odds that we would do an effective job, I think, are pretty low. I think we'd make mistakes. And that, again, one of the great lessons of the latter case was how people ordinarily with great judgment can just make mistakes. And the same with the same school case in China. You can have great people who have on things you know well, a really good judgment, when you get into new areas and just make mistakes. So I don't think rabbi's integrity is likely to survive the experience of being a censor as a class, any more than most censorship classes that maintain their integrity. They always end up censoring criticism of themselves, human beings. I don't see us having the expertise to do it particularly well, and I don't think it's so broken, at least on an ethical level. So I also have, this is a much riskier thing. On the one hand, I don't like puppy dog leadership, where the goal is to figure out what will people follow and then talk to them that way. This is the legitimate critique, I think, of the conservative movement in Salaka. I have no interest in turning Orthodox Salaka into that. On the other hand, Mark Sayas has this really powerful idea that the goal of the community rabbi at least should be to justify the practices of the existing from community, that you give them credit and you assume that they're behaving in a way which behaves with integrity to the rest of Halakha. Rosenzweig has that model that you test things for their coherence with the rest of the system, and you can test it experientially as well as intellectually. There are these people living a life that can plausibly be perceived as integrated if they engage in these practices, and if they do, then you give them, as people live what to all appearances an integrated religious life, in the integrated religious life are actions that you cannot immediately see the halakhic justification for, then the burden is on you to try and find the halakhic justification. That's basically Marat Sayas' position. Even if you end up, he goes very far, he says even if you end up adopting a dilfic reading of minority opinion. If you have a community that you genuinely regard as observant, your job is to justify them. Those who are interested more in that can read Rabbi Shmuel Miles Brody's thesis at Harvard, which was on Marat Sayas and working law on this. I think actually came out of the summer where our Friday Shurim was about, that was going to the Marat Sayas' Mishpat Ahara.
Okay, so that's right. That's the background from which I was writing in this Shiva. So rhetorically, I thought that I would start out because I think that that's how most from Jews come to the issue, by stating the case against journalism as starkly as possible. That it seems to me that journalism pretty much tracks the Rambam's first Baal Shehara. That's what journalists do. They go to people and they say, have you heard anything nasty about this person? You go from person to person, right? You could easily describe the activity of journalism in that context, and even the best scenario, like the case in the Shiva, where you're assigned to write a subspace, so being assigned to write a subspace will lead to the Baal Shehara. Because you're going around and asking people to say good things in such a context where if you run across any enemies, they of course are going to say bad things. So that was the point. So it seems to me that you have to start off prima facie by acknowledging that it's an uphill battle to find a place for journalism. The counter to that, right, and of course if journalism is often that way, then of course reading newspapers is out there, and obviously talking to reporters is out there. Right, and talking to reporters is also runs in the problem to be impacted. So all of journalism is out there. That's the prima facie of the start. As opposed to this, we have all the sources that the Jester alluded to, including the Klein himself, which seems to suggest that logically people allow reading newspapers.
Yeah, I was going to possibly allow it. It's not like newspapers are less full of negative information about people in the 21st century than they were in the early 20th. I think if you were to read the newspapers and just read it, I don't think they would be New York Times standard.
So I think we have one of these theories where, right, it's something funny, I think I acknowledge this, I agree with this, that there's a gap, I think Michael said there, that there must be something we're not understanding. Right, because if that description of journalism philosophically were correct, then it should be a non-starter that Jews have to stay away from newspapers, and is not. Okay, so how does one, So it seems to me, the standard way of eliminating this is to construct some notion of Torah. I talked about the various ways in which Torah is constructed, and all of us noted that Torah fundamentally ends up creating a subjective category, which is a checklist along the way of Yale, as you know, 7-part checklist, 31 long lines that Yale set up. So then I tried, I know you have a single long lines that Michael, we'll try a thought experiment. Let's take another example of a case where we allow something only on the grounds of greater Torah. And let's take an area where halacha is developed, as opposed to Lashon Hara, where we're largely making it up. And that area is medical ethics. We'll take a very simple example, which is bloodletting. Right? So bloodletting is an issue derived from Kabbalah. It's on your parents, but Gemara suggests that maybe you shouldn't do it then. Because of the risk. But standard bloodletting is Kabbalah, which is Mutter Latar Fafua. So if you're a from orderly in a hospital, when you take blood from patients, every patient who walks in, you take blood from. Right? Even if they come in, right, whether they come in with, God forbid, advanced cancer, or they come in because they need a tetanus shot, or because they have a headache. Right, you take blood. And most patients in the hospital, you take blood from at least once a day. Now, if you have to engage, do we suggest that orderlies are supposed to engage in a judgment each time
is the medical benefit for this patient worth the kavala or not? Because if it's not, if it turns out that this patient is simply having blood taken from them because we set a procedure up, right, in which it's better for the hospital to have blood taken from every patient, but there's no specific benefit to this patient, then it should be up there. And from doctors and even from orderlies, you have to think about this every time, right, every time we engage in a standard medical, right, every time we engage in an invasive test, all the sorts of issues should never be looked at systemically, or it has to be done case by case. Yes, sir.
Is it the responsibility of the patient to question whether his orderly or doctor is in right thing by being
done for them? If you allow some of them, sure.
Yeah,
well, the patient can claim and say they won't treat me otherwise. If the patient has a pragmatic argument, they have to allow.
You have to ask.
Yeah. Of course. Right, but it seems to me that can't be. That can't be. It's not how we expect orderlies in hospitals to function. We expect orderlies in hospitals to function by carrying out the rules of the hospital, because we assume that the rules of the hospital are constructed so as to create the greatest good for the greatest number of patients. And that the job, fundamentally, so long as we have faith that the hospital is the hospital is thinking in terms of Kavala, and this system is constructed so as to engage in that Kavala, that it's legitimate to simply follow the rules of the hospital. So then, assuming that you find the analogy, and we can tell you, and we'll get to this, because obviously this is another way of understanding the facility, particularly in this case. The question is there an analogous system that we can construct for Lashon Hara? Meaning that if we say that Lashon Hara is mutter for certain kinds of kavalas, and kavala is mutter for certain kinds of kavalas, and you can, the kavala for kavala can be constructed systemically in such a way as to exempt individual actors from deciding whether there's a kavala in their individual action, they're only considering whether they are functioning as part of a system that achieves a kavala. Can we say that there are certain types of systems for spreading information, including negative information, which are set up systemically as well, such that the question of the individual actor is, am I acting in accordance with the rules and norms of a system that is constructed so as to achieve a legitimate goal? So here I say that you might argue that in fact the cases are distinct, and the reason the cases are distinct is that Kabbalah is primarily the major concern of Kabbalah is simply, are we harming people? So that means that issue of harming people we can address systemically as opposed to individually. But Lashon Hara, the real issue is not harming other people, the real issue is that you're harming yourself. Right? By saying Lashon Hara, you damage your own soul, perhaps in a way that medical threat, perhaps we would say that when you say Lashon Hara, even with Tuelis, there's still an impact on your soul, whereas if you stick a needle in somebody's other blood, there isn't the same impact on your soul. Yes, sir? Right, that's my claim. You might argue that you can make this kind of sense for medicine because it's not about virtue. But Lashon Hara is about virtue, so you can't engage in the same kind of systemic thought because the individual actor will still be damaged.
But once you start talking about virtues,
yeah,
is the argument harder to make?
Yes, I think.
The point you're making here, when you're talking about the virtue impact, is that it's straightforward. It makes you a worse person.
Yeah.
Not about some kind of impact of sin on the human soul.
Right. Exactly right. It's a direct action as opposed to some kind of mediated through some kind of transcendental metaphysical phenomenon. Yes, sir.
By having to go through the process of sticking needles in other people.
Uh-huh.
Is that not supposed to happen if you're a worse person either?
So I pointed out that this distinction doesn't really hold up in the Rambam, because the Rambam also has a virtue ethics statement by Kabbalah, which is, even if you raise your hand to hit somebody, you become a Rasha. Okay, and there's no consequences at all. Right, so I think that in the Rambam, even though, as we pointed out, right, that the Rambam has a very clear virtue bias in Lashon Hara, to the point that he doesn't even mention to us. Right, but to claim that there's a distinction between Lashon Hara and Kabbalah in that regard, such that you can't use medicine as the proof for journalism, right, that doesn't work because he also has a virtue ethic by Kabbalah. But even if you don't want to uphold the Rambam, you could say it in another context. I'm going to use that in a moment. Yes, sir. Well, I haven't chosen it. I'm just saying that I set up a straightforward analogy between medicine and journalism. And I said maybe you could break that by saying Lashon Hara is about virtue and medicine is not. Right? So I mean, that's why I'm in this argument. But I said in the Rambam himself that distinction doesn't hold full because the Rambam also believes that medicine is a virtue ethic, and yet I think the Rambam would really have to concede. Right, the medical orderly case. Right. However, I said that that this distinction does risk the distinction which seems to make my systemic model problematic. A way of claiming that a virtue focus, the virtue focus of Lashon Hara, makes my systemic argument problematic emerges from the children's revolution we did. Because the Ramosha that we did, Ramosha explicitly is willing to accept socially negative consequences in order to preserve the virtue of the student he's engaged in. So it sounds like Ramosha is making that claim that in terms of Lashon Hara specifically, even though it would be better socially for the authorities to know who did everything wrong. But nonetheless, the motion says that we're not going to allow you to impose on people the obligation to give. Rather, we should wait for people to arouse themselves to heal this breach in the social fabric. And it's difficult to imagine that a motion would say that rather than demanding that, right, if we had a crisis, rather than demanding that people give blood, we would say, you know what, halakhically we'll just say, well, whoever's inspired. Legally it might, but halakhically no, right? We say this is right, you know, we don't say only the medical orderlies already assigned of those, only the ones who are inspired to poke needles in you should draw blood. So it seems that Russia is open to creating this kind of distinction, but the emphasis on virtue is heavier in Lashon Hara than it is in Chabal, and therefore the kind of argument on right, therefore the analogy by itself is insufficient to try and set up the halakhic mechanism I'm trying to use. Okay, so here I want to argue that there is, however, another interesting absence in Rav Moshe, which is that Rav Moshe never asks the teachers to tell the students. So you have three options. Option A is, you all got to tell me who did this. Option B is, you should all decide on your own whether or not to tell me. And option C is, you can tell me, but only if you've gone through the seventh, right, through the checklist of the client. Only if you're sure that you have my list for the person you're telling about and telling me is the best way that you can accomplish this, and that you're confident that I'm not going to overbuy it. And a whole set of things. And this is actually a case that I talked about in a lot of my students again this year. About whether students should inform other students who are using illegal substances. And to what degree, right, are students responsible for trying to figure out whether in each case the administration would respond appropriately,
right? Maybe they should just, you know, do they have to warn each other, all sorts of things. Otherwise, he doesn't say to the other teacher, to tell the student, I want you to go give Musr to your friend first, and if your friend listens, there are no circumstances to tell me. None of that. He just says, those who are inspired to correct this wrong, right, should come and tell the teacher, but you shouldn't impose it on them. So why is that missing? So I had a lumbish talk. If you wanted to use it, which is the following. The test that was planning to use. So I guess you're all familiar, well, recently you're already, if you're not, with the Hakira, the same as the things are literal or the clear. Right, things are kutra, if we say that in this particular context the prohibition simply doesn't apply, we define the prohibition as limited to cases, right, case of text, so you're in case Y, the prohibition doesn't apply. And kutra, sorry, and the clear is that the prohibition applies to both cases X and Y, but in Y, the prohibition is overridden by a greater value. Right, the naskinia is whether you have, right, whether if in case Y, if you have means other than the prohibition to accomplish the goals, you have to use them. Okay, that's right, and that's among the naskinias. And fundamentally, the naskinias exactly track the Chofetz Chaim test. Right, which means that the Chofetz Chaim, right, essentially, what the Chofetz Chaim taught you is that Lashon Hara is the Chuya with the Lord. However, Rebbe Chanan, in his piece, comes out of his way to tell you that Lashon Hara is not the Chuya, Lashon Hara is Hutra. That's all lumbish import of his piece. There is no interlashon hara with the Lord. Okay, right, that's the whole burden of his piece, that it doesn't apply. Therefore, one can argue that there is a focus between the Chofetz Chaim and Rebbe Chanan, that whether the Lashon Hara is the clear of the Torah, and the reason the Moshe doesn't mention the Chofetz Chaim test is because he talks like Rebbe Chanan. And he owns the Torah. Right, so in fact you don't need those tests. However, that's what, right, the Moshe holds that from a virtue perspective, it's not wise to take advantage of the Heter. Even though there's no technical issue whatsoever, right, it's just a policy consideration. Yes, Michael.
Could even become a
kind of
reason to
the Torah,
just that you think
the Torah is a... No, because the client's condition had nothing to do with Torah. They're all about, right, they're not about ends, they're all about means. The client's list, right, they all write signs very nicely, is the same Torah, the same thing. The only thing that changes are things external to that, like whether you could have accomplished it in some other way, or what your motivation is.
So
some of them don't know if you use the Torah, or anything, but if one of the conditions is that the condition of community and a regulation is that you have to be personal, you have to leave the Torah, anyone you have to use. So that's exactly what the Chofetz Chaim, in the Kliya, has to show the definition of necessity is that this accomplishes that.
And the way to know either on the distinction
between
Kliya
and the Kliya
are from
this limitation of Kliya. No, that undoes the whole list of the Kliya distinction, if you make that point. Right, so I'm okay if you want to do that, but I say, but working within that existing one, this category, this ties in. It's okay, I'm not going to end up here. Right, this is prohibitive. Okay, yes, I
That's
right.
He doesn't even acknowledge the distinction between the Torah.
It seems like you're including the distinction, and
he doesn't
recognize
the
distinction. But he recognizes the distinction. That's why he has the whole lumbus is about, he needs to construct the case which is only the Kuya, so that the Gemara can use this to say X pushes aside Y, because he doesn't understand why he's constructing the case in ordinarily Sutra. But intellectually he has the category. He just comes up with wild Kiddush. Right. It's a wild Kiddush. Now, as I could say that lumbishly, but Lalapa, it seems to me deeply implausible, A, that Rav Moshe would reject the Chofetz Chaim without even quoting him, and B, that Rav Chanan would
you'll be passing against it all the time, right, you know, so blindly, since, especially since we saw the last year, the Lufthansa's entire comment on the Tosos out, they thought that it was almost a defense science. Right, so, while this works wondrously, it doesn't seem to me to be likely to be MS Malacca.
Historically, right, he was
just telling
me about
the
whole thing. If you want to go there, we talk about
it. Yeah, that's right, all of this, right. So, you know, on the other hand, it worked really neatly, wondrously. You have to figure out what you want to do with it. Okay, there's a neat little compromise, which is as follows, that the in terms of the classic examples of Sutra versus the Sutra, it's because Nefesh and Shabbos. There's one of focus in the Gemara, and Vipash is in the Sutra. Right, which means that you can only violate Shabbat to save a life if the only way to save the life is by violating Shabbat. But interestingly enough, when we pass in the Kuya in principle, we pass in Hutra in practice. Right? It's up to do a Hakila Mikhov Nefesh and Shabbat. Right? Same idea. Okay, right, so we understand, right, so the same notion of ruling can we already have in this concept, and maybe we could just hold that Ramosha believes in practice that it doesn't work. Right? So even though in principle we said, just like in principle we can make people think about whether this is really necessary to save a life, but in practice, if you figure out a way to save a life on Shabbat, just do it. So in principle, we should be figuring out the best way to make sure that your classmate doesn't dent the lockers again, but in practice, it just doesn't work that way, so just tell the teacher to make sure it stops. But that's hard to say in Rav Moshe, A, because Rav Moshe is willing to accept this right thing that, right, that you won't find out about some things, you're not totally concerned about consequences. Yeah, so it's actually what remotion motivation would be for all of a sudden the same year you can't use for a science test. Why not? That doesn't work for me either. So I wanted to suggest the following.
I'm not really clear on, right? Because Rav Moshe's argument is about the virtue of the Talmidim, right?
Yeah.
But it's also, because it's about tenets, it's actually a consequential.
Virtue is a consequence too.
Absolutely, I think when you want to make that distinction, it makes sense to make that distinction that the sole consequence is that you will be a slightly worse person. But I think it goes as, when you're talking about the way in which we're mahanah our children, it goes a step further.
Yeah, I'm going there. But for this purpose, it's still under this, right? It just strengthens the distinction between medicine. Unless you think that the point of Rav Moshe is concerned for the consequences, if you want to say immediate consequences on the soul of students or long-term consequences on the society which has such students, he's concerned about that in terms of Lashon Hara, that it seems implausible that he would turn it out for
the whole set of consequences which we're concerned about on both sides, right,
yeah,
are kind of consequences, right? On the one hand, the possible... The impact on their kind of letting people get away with things. On the other hand, the impact on their forcing them to speak Lashon Hara, right? So I think when you look at it in that sense, right, all he's really doing is weighing possible.
That's right. But all I need for my argument is that he weighs the kind of impact of doing the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. More heavily in terms of Lashon Hara than it seems to be plausible he would regarding Kabbalah.
Okay.
And there may be a background implication for that, which is that the loss and consequences in terms of medical healing are on the same axis. Right? What you did wrong was you harmed the body, what you gained was the body became healthier. Whereas in Lashon Hara, what you did wrong was you harmed someone's reputation, what you gained was was an improvement in behavior. And they're not on the same axis at all, so it may be that they don't cancel each other out.
Right, well, as I said, the consequences exactly are on the same axis.
Is it Lashon Hara?
Yeah, in this case, yeah, because it's not about the impact on the election Harley is concerned about. It's the impact on the education of the kids.
Yeah.
So on both sides, it's all on Cook. It's all on Ben Axis.
Okay, you could argue, right?
That's my issue.
Your argument is that maybe Russia isn't concerned about shutting her up per se. It's only interested that we'll shut her up in educational context.
So that's what we're talking about.
Right, that's a fair distinction, right? It's kind of an improvidence. And you're right, there's a fair distinction.
You might like to look at the consequences
of
the
government
of society.
Swimming,
and then when you're
harming
is not one person, then
everything
else, you're
harming
society and
everything. Yeah, I'm Moja. That's a tangential issue as to why, right, just as being a wider question would make the distinction, if he does. But if it just is that he doesn't. The core interesting thing in Rav Moshe is I wouldn't say go so much as the contradiction, but the tension between, on the one hand, his focus on what I'm calling virtue, in that he's willing to accept immediately negative social consequences, and at the same time his failure to cite the other signs, right, conditions, which are fundamentally virtue limitations. Right, on what seems to be science or right, a technical heterogeneous as well. Right, so that's right, that's what I'm focusing on, is that there seems to be at the very least, yeah, again, a theory is harsh. I think a deep tension in a much educational vision in this context. So I wanted to suggest the following secure, and I'm gonna try and expand that secure. What I wanted to suggest is that we say dechuya on the level of individuals. Whenever you're making a decision, as an individual as to how to balance the values of Lashon Hara, and maybe this is also true by medicine, but we'll get there in a moment. So you have to engage in a dechuya calculation. But, and this is not well written, the truth, so I can't make that, but when you're dealing with a system set up with, right, broadly to keep into account the Dechuya principle, function within that, once that system has been set up within that system for individual decision. Right, so you're entitled to consider, right, so when, as you set up systems as to how to regulate information flow, then you have to figure out, right, you have to take into account, is the negative information, right, am I setting up a system such that the minimal amount of negative information that could be set up systemically is being conveyed, et cetera, et cetera. But then once you set up that system, individuals don't have to engage in that calculation. Okay, so at that point, for individuals, et cetera, and all they have to ask is, am I accomplishing the purpose of the system? And if I am, they'd have to think about whether individually they could find a way around the system to do it better. Yes, sir?
Doesn't mean that all individuals have to be aware of some of the features of the system, right?
Individuals have to be aware of the framework of the system so they can decide exactly what it is.
Okay. So then how...
Like, possible order, you have to know possible rules.
So long as, right,
so long as individuals are functioning within a system, right, so on the systemic level is the clear, and for the individual within the system is the truth. If you're functioning as an individual, quite individual, right, there's no overarching system that can create the head shift, you're back to the clear.
Yeah, I understand the whole function of the clear. Depending on how that plays out. But at the end of the day, you still have to be very aware and conscious of what you're doing and your actions. You're still, like, you still ethically need to have that. You're a reporter, and every time a case comes to you or a story comes to you, every time you consider that.
Well, let's hold up the reporter. Now, let's just talk about orderlies in hospitals. Okay, we'll talk about analogy reporters. If I want to take blood from you, right, as an individual not functioning in a medical framework, I have to ask myself, do I need to take blood from you now? I can't take blood from you because I have some kind of ongoing experiment, right? So which, right, where yeah, I might find some useful medical information from you, right? Whereas, you know, I have, I can only take blood from you without considering whether I need to take blood from you now. If I'm part of, right, if there's a system, a reasonable system set up to achieve the goals of public health, which says you take blood from every patient. Right. Once I said, right, now I'm talking about whether there is an analogy for reporters or not. Right, that's in the medical world. Now, right now I want to see if I can, right, that I think it's plausible and it's compelling that the medical world functioning within the healthcare system exempts you from making that calculation case by case. That we don't hold that it's us or the work of the hospital orderly, and it turns out that in 5% of cases you don't need to draw blood from patients. Right, so long as there's a plausible argument for saying that it works better for the hospital if you take blood from everybody. Okay?
No, I'm just trying to think of a Halloween example where I would not be sure.
Okay.
But at least it's the case, but regardless of that minority, it was more important.
Okay, so we covered it. Okay, yeah, Dale.
So, like, I only work, I mean, I'm not entirely sure what you're, like, so you're setting up the whole system, right?
Yeah.
So determining whether the whole system is good or not, like, it has to achieve
its
goals, like, in any way, or in the best
way? No, the obligation on the community.
Yeah.
Yes, right. I guess there's a few obligations.
Mm-hmm.
The obligation on the community is to set up a system which achieves the maximum good of the minimum damage.
I mean, so what if the system is in place and not the system? Like, what you mean, I mean, you could say, well, nothing else exists, so we don't know, but you could say, nothing else exists, so, and we don't know.
Right. So then I would say,
we don't know if it'll
work,
but it's not worth it. Or you could say, well, maybe the system we have in place is not ideal, and maybe there are actual ways to
change it. So I have two answers to that. One is, I think that a reasonable standard is the kind of standard that the Supreme Court uses to review, right, to review congressional legislation in some context, which is whether it can reasonably be understood as having, or can be understood as having a reasonable aim. If you have legislation that seems to violate it, yeah, okay, to create invidious racial distinction. Right, so you have to test whether, but they claim that the purpose of this rule is to accomplish some totally race neutral purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, right. So there are various levels of testing to determine whether you accept their declared purpose or whether you say that's ridiculous. It's not what it does. I think, yeah, you know, so the Supreme Court has some of the fun thing of, you know, strict scrutiny, intermediate scrutiny, and light scrutiny, or whatever it is, I forget what it was. This is setting a standard, and you have to understand that when you're setting a standard in this big world, you're making up to some degree. Right, so the standard I would set...
So it's like that's the last you've gone, like,
yeah.
That's
right. The standard I'm setting up is, can it plausibly be understood as setting that in, A, and B, what I would not argue, well, this is a little bit more radical, is that the community has an obligation with HPILA, but the individual functions could be other. So even if the community has an obligation to set up the best possible system, and as an individual, you may have, as an individual member of the community, you may have an obligation to work to protect the system, but given that the system is in place, you're now in a video situation. And so long as as long as the system achieves its goals, right, as long as it would be what they're on the ritual, let's say, right, then an individual you're entitled to follow it. So that's more radical, and I might want to find some way of eliminating that as well. Yes, Abby.
I'm still a little confused with that, whether you're trying to say that there's a right? Whether completely for the community and the individuals,
but
one is
the
Kahlua is
Akila
and
the
Hera is the other.
So what I'm suggesting is, right, I'm doing two different levels. I'm saying A, what I'm saying is that we pass that when you set up the system, you're obligated, right, the community sets up the system, its obligation is to do it in accordance with the Kahlua. Once the system meets the standards of the Kahlua, individual, right, within that system can treat it as such. Now, all he has to do, right, his only obligation is to follow the system. That's A. B, I'm suggesting with hesitation and knowing these qualifications that maybe even if the system that's set up doesn't meet the ideal standards of the CLIA, right, but it's not ridiculous. Right? So that's enough, right? Even with appeal, that should have been the system, right? The system should have been different. Right? The first case was, the system is a appeal system, at least with Leah, and within the appeal system, there's no situation to review it. And these, even in the original system, the DBA-BOS system, it still looks like individual functioning with it.
And that's
an
appeal? Individual?
Yes. That's my tendency is that I'm missing one further qualification. I don't want to just go to say that VDM is the ideal system that can be both the standard, because I don't want systems where, you know, where if you have vampires running the system and they just, you know, they say, well, drawing blood accomplishes some minor medical purpose, therefore we can draw your blood so I can, right? Which would work for an ocean, right? As long as it's achieving the purpose. I don't want to go that far. Right, so I'm missing a standard. I'm missing a standard in there that's somewhat higher than the Kosher standard. I don't have it yet. I hope I'm suggesting that kind of thing. It won't work yet. Yes. Okay. So now the question, right? So that's within the medical framework. So the question is, so I think within the medical framework, again, I think that's a good description of what halacha is. The question is there an analogy to Lashon Hara? So I'm suggesting, right, so I want to try and explain the two together that way, and then suggest that once we explain the two together that way, it will successfully explain the Moshe. And if I explain the two together in Moshe, I'm in pretty good shape philosophically. And if I can say it right, now, I'm not explaining this to Eliezer, I should say. Yeah, well, I'm explaining this to Eliezer's conclusion, which I think is really compelling, and Rav Moshe's rationale. Okay, so this Eliezer has a case, which we're all familiar with, which is, are you allowed, is a medical insurer allowed to publish its records about treated so-and-so for STDs so that every billing clerk in the office can read it on the system? Or is it mechuyev to set up a one-to-one correspondence that everyone's medical records is read by only one clerk and the same clerk each time, so the fewest possible people know about all the negative medical consequences? Right? And are doctors only allowed to dictate to secretaries when they aren't signed themselves? Right? All sorts of issues like that. They have to minimize information flow in each case. Right? So they said no. Right? No, doctors don't have to evaluate each case, insurers don't have to evaluate each case, and regulate information flow radically differently for STDs and for common colds and things like that. You set up a system that's efficient for conveying information, and you no longer think case by case. Okay, but the people didn't frame it, though. The people said that the secretary and the doctor are an organic whole. But that we all, I think, said intuitively, or many of us intuitively, it's just not true. They're not organic whole. The doctor, right? The doctor can't convey all medical information to the secretary. He can only convey the information that's important to have conveyed in medical records. Right? And he can't convey, and there are lots of different people, and the doctor can't convey all the same information to everyone else, right, to everyone else, right, to everyone else, right? So, you know, the doctor, there's certain information he can convey to doctors in this group and certain to other groups, right? It's not, right, it does not, right, and there's all sorts of information the doctor may have learned in the course of his work. You know, the patient may have told him about all sorts of things that aren't no gas and diagnosis. And the doctor can't say that. It's not true. It is not true that doctors and secretaries are halakhically one unit as such. Even if you want to accept that for husband and wife in the way that Rashola does, and many of us have trouble saying it there also, right? Because not all information, the Michael's analogy, right? Not, you know, there is information shared among families, it isn't shared among others, but not all information is shared within the family either. For example, if I happen to hear incontrovertible Lashon Hara about somebody, which I've known to a lot of other members of my family, or it's about somebody outside the family, and I convey it to my family, just because I know it's why. So the whole organic whole model, for me, it strikes me that it captures something, right? It captures part of something that is intuitively true, but it can't be the right explanation. So I want to suggest that the correct explanation is that is that medical organizations are systems set up to accomplish the goal of human health. And just like we allow systems to draw blood, we allow systems to spread information to human health. Right? And the reason that you can give any information to the secretary is not because the secretary is part of you. Right? It's not that you and the secretary are organic whole. And it's not that it's because you are functioning within the... Right? What makes you the organic whole, so to speak, is that you're functioning within a system that has its role. Yeah?
Can you say that
Yeah, as long as we judge that the hospital accomplishes the proper goal, I don't care if it was done with a halakhic judgment in mind, I just have to ask myself, if the goal analysis is just the halakhic framework, it doesn't matter if it was done with specific halakhic intent.
Well, how are you
going to say that
the
rules?
The rules are set up based on
universal. So we have to ask ourselves, the first base question out there is, am I allowed to participate in this system?
So it all starts with...
Right, but once I decide that it meets whatever standard I set up,
which again, I would say, the end is the Kuya standard, is the way I'm framing that. The system which can plausibly be regarded as fulfilling the Zuccalia standard, then I'm allowed to function within the system. Okay, if you have that, there are certain professions, like it might be, that we hold that, there's nothing whatever that I can do that enables me to be a doctor. Because bottom line, doctoring is a system which, whatever the goals are, it argues that you're allowed to give people permanent brain damage and entertain others. You don't mean that's okay. Right. Or you could not. You could decide that, boxing has sufficient medical precautions and entertainment is of sufficient value that you're allowed to cause pretty much all criticism from your brain damage for the sake of entertaining the public. Right. As you choose. Right. But once that function, all you have to do is follow the rules of boxing. If you were a boxer, just start thinking, well, am I allowed in the solar plexus at this time? I don't know. Maybe they're not going to win. I'm supposed to win, right? And I can win without punching in the solar plexus this time, so I don't have to. I'm only going to punch exactly as many times I need to win. But I can't be. But either you're allowed to be a boxer or not. Once you're a boxer, you set other rules. Yes, sir. No. The American Medical
Society... The rules that you say are not practical, not discussing things with your secretary, not relevant to the
of course it wouldn't, that you wouldn't be allowed to discuss things with your secretary that way, right? And the reason which proves that you're not an organic goal, right? It's because that's not the right rationale. The right rationale is that you're part of the system of the system, and what makes the system legitimate is precisely the existence of those rules. Right? If the system says that doctors, that whatever information doctors learn from patients, they could then gossip about with their support board, then I might say, this is a system which doesn't meet the plausibility test. It's not a nuclear system at all. And therefore, you can't participate in it. But since precisely because the American system has such serious concern for patient privacy, that I can say, it may not be the best possible. I could certainly conceive of a system that was better in my mind. But this is pretty good. And I can say, plausibly, this is a system designed to meet the goal that all of us sets up. Okay. Have you ever touched on
Good.
pivot. Okay? Hang on. Okay, right, yeah, I'm trying to do very work my entire which I called the question before the end, and I'll try and bring all of them together.
Okay. So now, the question you ask is, why am I in the course of this? Right, I'm basically making an argument right now, from intuitive analogy, so it seems to me that we do all of the medical things. You know, in one case, the orderly case, I think it's obvious to some of us, but I don't even have a tshuva for that. In one case, the record said I have a tshuva which comes to a conclusion and doesn't use that reasoning. Now, I think this is a good account of Rav Moshe. Which is to say that I think the understanding of Rav Moshe is that what the school is trying to do is set up an educational system. Right? And within that system, it has to figure out how to regulate the way in which students should convey information to teachers. In the context of that system, you can decide that we don't really want to give students the capacity to say the reason, you know, the power to say, well, the reason we couldn't tell you anything was because, you know, we dislike a lot of our young men, and we dislike them, therefore we can't tell you about them because we don't need to put a train test on any animus. Right? Which is the first way. You can't do that, right? So the way you set up an educational system, you have to set up a reasonable ways in which students can tell teachers things, and then having set that up, you don't really want students to go through this question every time. That's not an effective way of setting up discipline. Right? It's just too unlikely anyone will ever tell you. I think that's the proper account is that Rav Moshe is setting up an educational system, and whereas he would understand as well that the criteria that I'm saying apply when you're not in a systemic relationship, you're just talking about how to tell a friend down the street. I think it's a plausible account. I would be hard pressed to claim that was sufficient in the court, that I'm talking like Rav Moshe. I think that if I had a basis or an other textual basis, I could then say, oh, and that must be what Rav Moshe said, and that we're using more authorities. So the best I can come up with is the concept of shlucha de Beidina. So we have the Gemara Tanaita which says that the Shlucha Bezin is allowed to tell you, is allowed to tell Bezin that the people they were sent to issue a summons to said nasty things because of the public hyena and Shema Ilah did not care. Now that was used by some people to say, aha, look, see, it must be theoretically Lashon Hara in front of Bezin. That, I think, as I pointed out earlier, I don't see how that fits the sugya at all. What I want to point out is that if you look at this sugya, there's nothing in that sugya which teaches you, oh, look, it's not the impression that Bezin say Lashon Hara, there's no pasuk. Like we say, right, here's the tour. Oh, right, we're learning it from a narrative. We're learning a narrative. We're saying that, look, Moshe Rabbeinu got mad. Why did he get mad? Pashas in the story is he got mad because he heard what the Zahn, he was heard not just that the Zahn Narim didn't come, right, but he actually heard all the details. Right, the Shnei HaSnesim came back and reported, they said, lo na'aleh, ha'm na'afi, 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 the proof is from ha'inei ha'nashim to na'kir, that if the Moshe's reaction is, right, only makes sense if you assume that he knew the details of what they said. There's no need to say that they're not coming because they're not there. But the team of Shlach Benzin was entitled to convey the information to Moshe, but there's no pasuk which tells us why. So, what else does I say when I say this pasuk teaches me that Shlach Benzin can say it to Benzin? Why? What's that there? So it seems to me what you are saying is that we just know it has to be Moshe, now we have to figure out these plural ones. So there's no pasuk that justifies it. And the svara is, I think, that, look, the Shnei Bezdin is part of the criminal justice system. And once he's part of the criminal justice system, he doesn't have to consider it for himself. In this particular case, is this all accomplished by telling Bezdin what the other person said to me, right, enough, or I have to think, well, maybe it's going to, right, maybe if he says something nasty about Judge X, that's going to bias Judge X and to lead to miscarriage of justice. Maybe, you know what, I think that the the thing they're being summoned for anyway is so trivial, who cares, right? What does it matter? No, a chef doesn't do that. We set up a system. What a system is, that a chef then is supposed to report everything he says, because that's the best system for conveying information. Because you can't rely, right, because you can't, because systemically you can't assume that a chef has a good judgment. That a chef then is entitled to assume he has good judgment. So systemically, we're going to have a shulke betin with good judgment, a shulke betin with bad judgment. So it's better on the systemic level to not give the shulke betin discretion. Yes?
What is referring to the process in a C-7 nomination and a second nomination, which
should I... Inakinami, so you put out, what you're doing is you're constructing an appeal of the system. Right? And you're right, but in fact it might be that it's right. No, in fact it might be that it's impossible. That's right. That's why that Chazal said that we're not going to set up a system. We don't believe that Moshe said it. Chazal could have said, all that proves is that a really good Shleach president can report what he wants. Right? They could have. They didn't. Because they thought, right, they thought that this in fact was, and I tend to agree with them, that you don't want, you really don't want somebody controlling access. You don't want somebody controlling information access to the courts. You want, right? That's bad policy. This you can see with, regrettably, with many contemporary Gedolim, that they allow lesser people to control their access to information. And so in the end, instead of getting the judgment of the great person, they end the judgment of the secretary after all that information gets them. That's a bad, that was true. It worked really well if you have a really great secretary, right? That's the chief of staff's job in the president's office is. Right? But if you're dealing with local, but they've been, right? You know, there's only so much you can get. Right? You know, you can't, if you have 1,000 but they've been, you're not going to get the top person for the president. There are lots of other things. We want the most, the best character in the world to be Shluchei Beit Din, then we want them to be Dayanim. Right? We want them to be part of him. Right? And it's like saying that, you know, that we need the, right, that because of the risk of people going through your garbage and discovering private information, we're only going to allow people to be garbage men who pass really strict integrity tests. That's right. Right? It's a perfect system. But if we end up, in order to do that, we have to raise the salaries. Right, so that's when it turns out that we're going to attract the best people, which is fine. I think we should have wonderful sanitation engineers, and many of them are spectacular people, but I'm not sure that I want the people of best character to be sanitation engineers rather than lawyers. And it might be better if the best person, I mean, that's what happens, who knows? Okay. So, right, so I want to argue that sugya actually provides to me a really good demonstration of the thesis that it's legitimate to set up systems, even about Lashon Hara, which removes discretion from the individual, so I'm going to get back to that, and remove discretion from the individual, the extent that they are, because their responsibility now becomes to follow the law, as opposed to making an initial assessment. Okay, now the question is,
are there other, all the models we've talked about deal with systems that involve limited groups of people, right, medical systems that share information. The question is, can we talk about societal systems, or sorry, educational systems, we're talking about societal systems, where we say that everyone in society is part of the system, right? So that as all members of society have the responsibility to function in accordance with the overall system as opposed to making individual decisions. Okay, so I thought that there was information that we want the whole people to know in that regard. So I thought here's Duncan's emphasis on the sugya is a new form, as the way Rashi understood it. As far as the Hanafim seems to, right, where Rashi said because the people should know what they're thinking, that they hate Moshe Rabbeinu, it sounds like that there's a kind of spatial goal, that it's well.
in having people, in having the community having accurate knowledge of the spiritual level of all the individuals within it. And I think it's okay, that's just well it. Now we can just figure out what the most efficient means. What a plausible means systemically that Jing Matola is. And we right, and that would be trying to build up. But you have to look right, and I thought that right, that the models where we, you know, where we give models for bad reputation, where we put people to care, also seems to suggest this notion that we see that there's a value for people to have accurate knowledge of people's spiritual levels. And you could set this up as a model for total transparency, like a communal value of total transparency, and that would eliminate most of the self-emotion are in practice. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. And there are also clear cases in Chazal where we limit public information, and the easy example of that is that we don't want the public to know who said Chayev and who said that guy in a court case. Right? So we don't see transparency as the overall value. Right? So we have to try and navigate what type of information do we think is valuable for the public to know, what type of information not. And then can we set up or acknowledge that a system functions well enough to spread the proper information while limiting the spread of improper information to be seen as a system that we can then function in accordance with as opposed to making individual decisions. So it seems to me that the model I would use to set up to evaluate the system is the Mari Vyles Tshuva. Mari Vyles suggests that public figures are accounted for, right? There's a value of transparency for public figures which is not the case for private figures. And even the value of transparency for public figures has to be balanced against the interest of not driving people out of public office and of not preventing the public officials from engaging in behavior that we approve of that means anything to keep secret. Right, but essentially, I say Mari Vyles' model is maximum transparency about public matters for public officials when that doesn't interfere significantly with the duty. That's a shorthand, right, a shorthand summary of the Mari Vyles. And then it seems to me that the specific question that the question you have to engage in is then whether the system of investigative journalism as we have it, or some code of investigative journalism that at least some journalists function within, can we say that system that functions within either a specific newspaper or within the culture as a whole is plausibly understood as fulfilling the Mari Vyles overall system, such that reporters can then say to themselves, well, if I follow the rules of system X, and then I no longer need to decide as well as every individual action I do. Okay, that's the end of the theoretical framework, and that's when I got to the specific case. So the specific case there is that, you know, it seems right, there's a lot of rhetoric there which is all reasons to, you know, where, about, you know, where I'm interested in trying to explicitly say that there must halacha acknowledges the legitimacy of journalistic practice. So it seems to me the way I framed it is that there's a legitimate public interest in knowing how charities are run. So that responsible investigative journalism seems to need, right, you know, the codes run at high level newspapers. The codes that most journalists acknowledge as what journalism should be, whether or not they think that specific newspapers can survive living up to them. Are plausibly understood as ways of fulfilling the public interest in knowing how public charities are run without causing tremendous damage. Therefore, it seems to me that that investigation of Magen-Ezra financial practices is logically legitimate so long as it functions in the norms of generally accepted journalistic practice. That's what America has picked up. America has picked up that the way in which we make public charities accountable is we have journalists investigate. Okay, all of that. Okay. Now I said, well, American society doesn't impose any duty on people to talk to reporters. And we give journalists the right to investigation without a correspondent, the right
the right to investigate without a corresponding obligation on individuals to assist investigation. So from the standpoint of investigative journalism, the best you can do is to say that halakhically Greenberg has a right to talk to Sarah, because if she has a right to ask, then there must be a right to speak, and that can't be with me either, and therefore it has to be okay to tell her. But you can't impose an obligation on him to tell her, because there is nothing in the American system that requires assisting journalist investigation. However, it seems to me that he does have obligations, namely prevention of Phil Hashem, and protection of the public interest, and things. I think question of that, right, but public interest. And the question he then has to ask is, does he have a way of fulfilling those obligations without telling her? Right, and my answer to sort of essentially is, I think not. When it comes to the sexual practice, that's what I agree with all of you, is that if there's a real danger of harassment, then probably, he doesn't have the obligation to tell her as such, he has an obligation to fulfill the salah d'amaretta and things like that. And if the only way you can fulfill that is by telling her, right, then he does, and otherwise I don't see there being a public interest in knowing about the sexual practice that Charlie has. But it's not clear to me that that's a decision that needs to be made by a person. As such, I think you can just set up a standard of what is the public interest. If somebody argues that the public interest is in making sure that only some people run for you don't have some fazuras, or somebody argues the Farnishin is the Hanafim as such, I don't know that I could talk to them that I want to impose my scale of values on them. I might or might not. My instinct is that I would tell them that if this were my decision, I would think this was wrong. Okay, so that, now let's come back to obvious question a little bit. Point two, it seems to me that particularly when you're dealing with a system like journalism, where you're not dealing with compulsory rules in an organization, where you're dealing with the norms of a profession, then there still is a tremendous amount of room for individual ethical reflection, because you have to keep asking yourself, is this really within the norms of a system that can't possibly be decided, right? Because there isn't on the whole, mechanical rule helping you do that. A. B. Just as a society has a continual obligation to try to perfect its system, especially when you're dealing with a system of norms as opposed to a system of rules, right? There's lots of room for discretion still. Right? Nobody's forcing journalists to investigate in particular ways. When you're dealing with norms, you're dealing almost entirely with the creation of gray areas as opposed to black and white rules. And so Naval Kishuda Tarah applies just as well to that as it does to anything else. And you can say I'm following the norms of journalism and behave in disgusting fashion by looking for every way to stretch it, right, to reveal disgusting information about people, but maybe not. Alright, so I think there's still a tremendous room for individual discretion. So that's my overall thesis. I think that I can create space for investigative journalism for investigative journalism in accordance with high-level norms as being part of a system that accomplishes the plausible public interest of knowing certain things. You have to define what those things are that the public has a legitimate interest in knowing. That doesn't require, it requires journalists to pick a system of journalists, it requires some journalists to pick a system of journalistic norms that is compatible with all these definitions of what the public has the right to know and what kind of damage is, and only to work within those systems, and impose an obligation within those systems to behave in the manner that best approximates the maximal achievement of goals at minimal cost. But it doesn't require the invention of a detailed halakhic code of journalism. It doesn't require halakha to start from scratch. It would be a useful exercise, very likely, to conceive of a halakhic code from scratch and then use that as a means of advocating for reform of the journalistic profession. But it doesn't mean that it's up there for journalists to participate in that profession until those reforms have been achieved.
so long as the system as a whole can be understood as meeting the standard. Okay, questions. I know you were very patient. There was a lot of that.
Okay, second question, clarification. When you started this little track with the graphical child, and you're applying to the graphical question, the first question you have to ask is whether we should buy into the deal. It seems like the way you asked that, and I could just be able to say it, is that what Sarah has asked herself is not whether the American media today upholds particular standards in general, but only with regard for town and our media treats, you know, charity cases and tough cases or something like that, or some more narrowed subfield in general, and whether there's, you know, whether there's a good sense of care for working, and then you can do it. So that's two very different things, and it's really the question of whether when you're talking, we need to move the buying into the organic system, whether we have to take the whole system as a lower something.
It's a very good question, and when I have to pull a little bit, could be a high-level journalism as opposed to so the whole event and tell this thing is between the legal framework we set up and the whether we judge the system that she's part of, the newspaper she's part of, the department she's part of, the editor she works for. I think those are excellent questions. My tendency is to think that that she has to pick a system that actually governs her practice. Right? And if she can, there's a system, right, and that could be really small. Right? As long as her practice is really wholly bounded by that small unit, that's enough. Or if it's wholly bounded by a large unit, that's enough.
I think
like one of the really interesting framework you have to think about is what about a freelance journalist? Right, so I think that she can say, well, I work for a newspaper that has standards that function as well. What about freelance journalism? So what I'm trying to argue for, but I think this needs work, is that she can adopt some set of norms that is recognizably the norms of a particular subset of journalists. Yeah, it's very much a model that, halakhic humility model, right? That I'm not clear that I can come up with a better system for achieving the ends of halakha by functioning as an abstract mondan, right? Than she can functioning as a journalist, so long as Torah creates the framework. Right, which is functioning with it. It may be that it'll even end up saying you can subjectively create a... The thing is, the more subjective, if you do it case by case, you're just back to a pure legal standard. Can't you create a system of rules for yourself? You created the rules, right? So in what sense do you need the rules? Do you need the rules as opposed to case by case? It has to be some way in which overall goals are achieved better by functioning with a system than they are, right, than they are letting you make your decisions by yourself.
Okay. One other way to ask
you this
question. Yes. Or do you have to keep on asking the question of what the community is inviting you? Or is that one time deal? You just get out of time.
I think what I tried to say in this case, again, much more work is necessary, is that in terms of what constitutes a legitimate story, it's not clear to me that, I don't know, I think that really, you have to know your editor. And it might be that you can't function within a particular, if you deal with a, let's even say, right, so the Washington Post. The Washington Post is a gossip column. You can't say that anything the Washington Post tells me to do, this whole Washington Post is set up to maximize it. No, they're not the gossip column has nothing to do with shooting off again. Okay. You might say that the National Reporting Bureau of the Washington Post has norms
that I recognize as, right, that I recognize that way. But there might be, the National Reporting, the National Reporting Bureau of the Washington Post has a system that's really good at minimizing damage with, right, in terms of the ends it seeks to achieve, but it doesn't define its ends properly. Right, so I have to go case by case in terms of determining whether the ends are legitimate. Although once the ends are legitimate, I'm willing to, right, I think that system of means is useful, and that's where I came out with their appearance, right? If I don't trust your editor. If your editor is interested in the story of sex, right, I don't know whether to trust your editor or not. I would probably tell her. You have to tell me. Do you think your editor has a notion of a legitimate public interest that can be assimilated to what I'm setting as a lawful norm, or not? And the answer is yes, that you can probably function within it, right? And the answer is not, no. It's not removing so much autonomy. It's just saying that I don't have to own her life. Okay. Yes, Jesse, Rob, and Michael. No, we should probably finish.
So just to sort of keep going in that direction from another angle, you start out in the beginning basically saying you're trying to preserve what we've got. I just wonder, you know, so I have a friend who got out of journalism school and he's very excited and he gets hired by the New York Post. And so fine, so he sets himself up to standard T, whatever it is, but then, and that's the job he's hired, and it's a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's sent to, you know, try and chase down the prostitute who was involved with the New York Post, Governor Spitzer, whatever it was, not because, you know, he's done. It's just because they want to talk to this woman because they think people will want to read it.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think, so the larger question I have is, you're trying to preserve the system by talking about the interest it serves, and it certainly does oftentimes serve those interests, but just like when we spoke about Coca-Cola as a model, it also does a lot of other things. And some of those other things, it's very hard to say meet any standards whatsoever. So I just wonder if you know, by telling journalists they have to set up a system whereby they personally meet whatever standards you're claiming they need to meet, and you keep it very very open. And but in reality, what we're doing, you're still doing the same thing that you really don't want to do, right? You're creating a fictional set of news organs, right, which meet these needs and only these needs, and don't do all sorts of other things which we really don't like.
What I'm trying to do is make it possible for some people to function within existing internal units, but not necessarily all of them, in the same way that as I allow the sharing of information, you know, medical records and the taking of blood in hospitals, doesn't mean that you can, that just because the American Medical Association its rules for plastic surgery, right, allow pretty much anything, or right, or allow late-term abortions, late-term abortions, even in case there's no risk to life of the mother. Does that mean you can do that?
I think the realities for journalists are very different than the realities for doctors, right? Like, I can decide, it's really easy for a doctor to decide I'm just not going to do the plastic surgery residency, you know? Whereas, if you're trying to get, you know, X number of people when they graduate college really, really, really want to be investigative journalists. I know a bunch of people like that. And, you know, of my seven friends who wanted to be investigative journalists when they graduated college, you know, four of them couldn't even get jobs in journalism, period. You know, one is working for the Post, one's working for a trade journal, and, you know, it's like perfect. You say you want to set up a system whereby Orthodox Jews can be journalists, but at the same time, if, you know, when you limit people's options to such an extent, you're basically that you can only work for the top five papers in the country, or the top eight, whatever it is. I don't know that really happens. That's all.
Could be. I mean, Yeah, we talked to the union about this, and he says that, you know, that there are different kinds of journalism, and I don't which paper you work for, you either do this kind or that kind. Mm-hmm. So I hope that it's not that bad. You know, there are lots of things that lawyers shouldn't do, you know, and I'd be happier if we didn't let people join law firms that have no interest in justice. But, you know, maybe it's not enough. I'm hoping that it deserves at least a few.
I think you can make that claim, right? But that's a very different claim than the claim you're making, right? Especially if basically what we say is, for lawyers, is we say that, look, there are all sorts of law firms that do terrible things. You're not allowed to do terrible things. And when you do, you know, you're over embarrassed. And that's fine. You can say the same thing for journalists.
That don't require lawyers to think every single time they follow the rules of the system of justice. Either functioning in a system that's generally recognized, but sometimes you're not. You know,
what they do isn't
that. Maybe journalism is worse. You know, maybe the state of journalism is so terrible you can't do it. I prefer not to think so. Okay, yes, Robert and Michael.
So I'm very similar to concerns to Jesse that the ability of these sorts of standards to degrade. You can come into a newspaper, even just some little local newspaper that seems to be doing a good job, and then all of a sudden, in the newspapers in this area, a newspaper that seems to have some sort of sense of post-journalistic ethics and top quality reporting. Well, of course, those 5-6 years all of a sudden start to turn into what?
A quick.
No, but if you came in knowing that this was a paper that had good standards, then how are you supposed to maintain that sort of reflection to know when it's time to go?
That's a pastoral question. It might be that you should, you know, learn more Torah, or it might be that you
But should... I mean, the only way you can do that is by constantly making once you've bought into a system that works, then you're good, and that's just...
I think you have to continually reflect on whether you're part of the system that's good. But you don't have to invent the system in detail all the time. Right? You have to ask yourself the question, right? You know, am I part, right? If it turned out, you know, that the psychiatrics that, you know, let's say psychiatry in America turned out to be a way of maintaining the hegemony of the Democratic Party, as opposed to a way of making people feel better. And, you know, if that happened over time, right, you know, if you, you know, all of a sudden you shift, you know, recognize Animal Farm is true, you know, it's true, then in economics, I believe.
I mean, it just seems so easy for people to be manipulated and destroy the system. You have, you know, presumably this driven passion, this goal for the truth, and that just seems like the sort of thing that can, you know, once people have different conceptions of what the truth is, all of a sudden, you know, you can become a passionate pursuer of
shit. That's true. I don't see not having journalism is better. Okay. Michael, Okay, sorry. Okay, you hit my question then.
Where do you get
halakha
that you have to prevent
for us? Where do you get halakha that you have to prevent? I mean, I think that Chil Hashem Berad is your regular Yavar. Right, so it's hard to... it's hard to imagine that you can't... I didn't force that. But I think there are lots of things you can do to avoid. I think it's hard to imagine there's a better toilet. I'll frame it that way. It's hard to imagine there's a better toilet than renting coalition. You can prevent somebody losing $5. Right? It depends, right? Say that that's just $5 is sufficient toilet, and coalition rather isn't, seems to be a very hard argument.
So I'm saying,
well, you can say Lashon Hara to save somebody $5. Right? That's a sufficient toilet. So how can preventing Shul Hashem Merabim not be a sufficient toilet? It's a very straightforward argument. I could probably look for sufficient sources if I wanted, but I don't think I need it. I think it's intuitive. All right. Thank you again. I think...